Well, just over this past week, there was very little in the way of data because, of course, it was two public holidays right at the beginning of the week where, you know, obviously we had Martin Luther King Day on the Monday, closely followed by the inauguration. And we're getting, you know, some clearer idea of the way the Trump administration will work. And that is obviously, you know, a lot of executive orders that were signed off, some of them relating to immigration and the deportation of immigrants. And we can see that it's going to be very selective, the way in which they impose tariffs. If you don't take back your illegals, you get tariffs imposed on you. And so we saw that with Colombia, we went back down, and then they took them off. But it's this sort of weaponization of tariffs, which is going to be an interesting development, I think, as time goes on. But apart from that, you know, we still had the data, not that there was much of it last week, initial jobless claims and existing home sales, and just overnight we've had new home sales. And the housing part of that is looking really strong. So December existing home sales in the United States, they were expected to lift by 1%, they lifted by 2.2%, and that was after a 4.8% lift the month before. But just overnight, December new home sales, they were expected to be up 0.9%. They went up by 3.6%. But what's remarkable about that was the previous month, which was up 5.9% initially, was revised up to plus 9.6%. So housing market there, both new and existing, is just about on fire. And that's a leading indicator and suggests that, you know, we've still got strength running through the U.S. economy. And we'll get some measure of that with Q4 GDP comes out. It's a bit rearward-looking now, but we get the advance reading of Q4 GDP that comes out on Thursday this week. And it looks as if it'll come in around about 2.7% annualized, compared with 3.1% going back the previous quarter. But long-term average is 2.5. So we're still running above long-term trend for GDP all the way through the fourth quarter of last year. We've also got the FOMC. And that comes up on Wednesday. We'll report into Thursday our time. And currently, the funds rate is at 4.5%. Yeah, in the course of the cuts to interest rates, we've come down a percentage point from the peak for US interest rates. We're now down at 4.5. And at this stage, it's a line ball call what the Fed does, whether it brings interest rates down further. Because late last year, of course, they were giving strong hints that they had very little room to bring interest rates down much further. The economy was running too strongly, the labour market was too tight, and inflation was getting a bit sticky. And so all those factors militate towards very little room for the Fed to bring interest rates down much further. And, you know, it's a toss-up between whether they hold things the same or whether they do a quarter. Whichever they do, Donald Trump won't be happy. He was at the Davos conference during the course of the week over in Switzerland and giving, you know, many of the strong statements he was making. One of them was just about every central bank, they should be bringing interest rates down and bringing them down a lot, and that includes his own Fed. So, yeah, we could see some tension between the Fed and the president and some interesting comments later in the week, regardless of what the Fed does when it comes through on Thursday. Some of the other data, in some ways this will go to the background in the current environment. There's a lot of things swirling around at the moment in the US, not least of which was, of course, the very large fall in Nvidia's stock price overnight, where it fell by 17% in one day. And you know, that's because all of a sudden the Magnificent Seven in the US have got competition, and that's this startup DeepSeek in China, which can do AI and probably do it better and cheaper than the Americans can. And so, you know, that sent a real shockwave through the market overnight. They're not alone in the way in which they can tackle these markets. And so, you know, we've got some of those factors wandering through as well. But just going back to the economic data, some of the other indicators that we'll be getting through the course of the week, we'll get things like consumer confidence, January consumer confidence. That's been rising mostly over the course of the past couple of months and is expected to lift to 105.9 from 104.7 when that comes out on Tuesday. That's before the Fed. After the Fed, we'll get the latest initial jobless claims for the week. They're still holding down pretty well. Last week, they were at 223,000. That was up a little bit on 217,000 the week before. But, you know, they look as if they're probably holding around that 220 to 225,000 mark, which is consistent with still very, very strong non-farm payrolls and a very tight labor market in the U.S. How tight? We'll get the Q4 employment cost index will come out after GDP on Friday, and that looks as if it's actually lifted a notch to 0.9% quarter on quarter from 0.8, so just lifting a little. And on Friday also, we get the latest December personal income, personal consumption data out of the US. And this just goes to show that, you know, basically because income's been rising, because you've had real wage growth for over a year now in the US and quite strong real wage growth, they're not having the problem that many other economies are experiencing where consumers are frightened to spend. They're spending pretty freely there. And in December, we think personal income went up another 0.4% after a 0.3% increase the month before. And as a result of that, personal spending will have gone up around about 0.5% in a month after being up 0.3%. So still very, very strong support running for GDP growth, even as we go into the first quarter of this year. Moving across to China, and we haven't had a lot of data there, but we've had last week People's Bank of China met. They did nothing with interest rates, but we've got some data on what they've been doing, adding to liquidity through the course of January, and they've been priming that very substantially by buying back assets. Yeah, they are sort of getting behind some sort of stimulus initiative, even though it's not showing there in either cuts to interest rates or changes to the reserve ratio requirement for banks either yet at this stage. What appears to be happening in China is the authorities are still on hold, waiting to see what Donald Trump's got planned for them. And when that becomes clearer, they appear to have something in reserve in terms of fiscal spending. So watching to see that. Some of the data, just overnight, we had the January manufacturing PMI and non-manufacturing PMI came out slightly softer. So January manufacturing PMI came back to 49.1 from 50.1 last month. The non-manufacturing PMI, 50.1 from 52.2. So maybe a slightly softer edge there in some of that data. But remembering that most of the run of actual data that we got over the past month has been mostly on the firmer side of expectations. We have got holidays coming in China. Obviously, we're running into Chinese New Year, so we'll have to wait a little bit until we get the cakes in versions of the PMIs. In fact, the first of those won't come out till Friday, so that all gets a little bit disrupted. As far as Australia's concerned, not a lot in my data last week, but we've had, obviously we're into the first stages of an election campaign, and at this stage, everywhere the Prime Minister or the Treasurer goes, they're announcing more spending initiatives, and that's into a system which has already got public sector spending growing at over 4% year-on-year in real terms. And this is going to be the conundrum for the Reserve Bank later in February. They meet in the middle of February this time with the new timetable for interest rate setting meetings. And one of the problems they face, before we get on to what inflation will show this week, but is that they've got some evidence that private sector demand was starting to pick up over the past month, but there's no room for it because the public sector is still spending very, very freely indeed. That's an issue because the governor of the Reserve Bank, Michelle Bullock, one of her key themes has been the output gap, and that we've still got more demand than our capacity to supply. And that's going to get stretched if we get any sort of lift running through private sector demand, and that appears to be starting to show some signs of happening. So that brings us to how they deal with what the Q4 CPI shows when it comes out on Wednesday. At this stage, the market thinks that it's coming in at or below the low end of where the Reserve Bank had in its most recent forecasts. And so, you know, that's why there's some excitement that maybe, you know, the Reserve Bank can cut rates in the middle of February. So Q4 CPI comes out on Wednesday this week. The market thinks that'll come in around about 0.3% after being up 0.2% going back the quarter before. That means that the annual rate of inflation will come down to 2.5 from 2.8. And also the underlyings, which is what the Reserve Bank's more focused on. The market thinks that both the trim mean and weighted median on Wednesday will come in at 0.6% quarter on quarter. They were 0.8 and 0.9% respectively going back the quarter before. That would bring the key trim mean measure down to 3.3 from 3.5. They're still sitting above the Reserve Bank's 2 to 3% target. Why aren't we looking at the headline CPI? Well, that's chock-a-block full of one-offs. Not immediately, but as we go into the second half of next year, we add at least a percentage point to the annual change in CPI. So relative to where we are now, as things like electricity bonuses run off and those sorts of things, yeah, the 2.5 that's expected for Q4 this year automatically becomes 3.5 by the time you get through to Q4 next year, if we've got inflation travelling sideways. And it's not a case of thinking that inflation is travelling sideways. If anything, there's pressure for inflation to rekindle later this year. Why so? Because the labour market is still very, very tight. We saw that in the most recent labour force report. We've got a spate of very, very large wage claims running through mostly state public sectors at the moment. They haven't been settled yet, but they are going to be settled at way above 3%. And probably over a period of years above 3% too for many of these groups. So, you know, that's wage growth, which is going to be inflationary by the time we get through to the later part of this year. So there's pressure points on the horizon for inflation to pick up again. And so one of the conundrums here is if you're the Reserve Bank and you can see this starting to develop on the horizon. Incidentally, one of the things they're going to have to change a lot when they do their next set of forecasts in the middle of February is everything to do with the labour market. Everything to do with the labour market is way too soft in their forecasts at the moment relative to where we've been. That's a pressure point. So I think it's still very, very line ball whether they decide to cut interest rates in the middle of February. And even if they do cut, their capacity to cut interest rates much is extraordinarily limited when you look at what is sitting there on the horizon going out into 2025 and into 2026. In fact, there's a very high possibility that by the time they get into 2026, they'll be into the next rate hiking to get on top of the inflation resurgence. So what do you do in those circumstances? Do you bring interest rates down for a very short period of time, only to be putting them up again as you go into 2026? These are the sorts of issues which I think the Reserve Bank will be looking at very, very carefully when they get through to their meeting in the middle of February. Just other data that's coming out here. We've got Q4 export prices and import prices there, both falling, but the terms of trade are roughly running in favour of Australia at the moment. Interestingly, we've got a bit of a trade surge adding to growth at the moment too. That's because China, also, you know, looking at the US, is actually bringing forward a lot of its imports of raw materials because it's worried about where tariffs are going to fall on them as they go further ahead. So, yeah, the best attack on that is stockpile, bring things forward. And that's one of the reasons why you've got things like the iron ore price, which is back above $100 a ton for the time being. We get producer prices coming out. Another one of those worrying elements for us. Producer prices are running pretty high here, largely domestically driven. And back in Q3, they were up 0.9%, 3.9% year on year. They're probably going to be around the 4% mark up year on year, and that's in the pipeline. And again, it goes to that problem with inflation picking up. If we get any sort of lift in domestic demand, I think we will get some lift in domestic demand as we go through the course of this year. Moving to Europe, and we had their manufacturing services sector PMIs for January. Services sector's holding up well. The story in Europe is that the service sector, which is very labour intensive, means that their labour market is still very, very tight, still generating quite high wage growth, largely because much of the activity is coming through the services sector. Manufacturing sector, different story. That's still very, very soft, and we saw that with the January manufacturing PMI. It lifted a bit, but only to 46.1 from 45.1. This week in Europe, we also get the ECB meeting. There's a lot of central banks meeting over this next week. Amongst them is our own Reserve Bank. Last week we had the Bank of Japan. They incidentally are going the other way. They lifted or hiked interest rates 25 basis points to 0.5. That's because they've reinvented inflation pretty effectively. Their inflation rate's running at 3% year on year now, unheard of in Japan over the course of the last 20, 30 years. They're now bringing their interest rates up, as others are bringing their interest rates down. The ECB meets on Thursday. Bank of Canada meets this week as well. Bank of Canada's probably going to go sideways, even though its economy's in recession. The ECB, they may try and chance another quarter percentage point, bringing the interest rate down a quarter percent to 2.75 from 3. Inflation in Europe is at 2.4% year on year. It's above their target, and it has been lifting of late. So it'd be interesting to see whether they do actually deliver that quarter percentage point, because the comments that have been coming through from the ECB are that they're conflicted, that sort of growth is not fast, but there's some inflation pressure in there. They recognise there's soft points in the European economy, but not everywhere. So when you're looking at Europe, the soft points are in France and Germany, two biggest economies. But some of the peripheral economies are doing extraordinarily well at the moment. And so some of those that we worried about intensely going back a few years ago, like Greece, Italy, and Ireland, are actually growing pretty fast at the moment. They're actually picking up, even as the core in Europe is suffering some weakness. We'll see that in the Q4 GDP. It won't be strong. It's expected to be, it comes out on Thursday, and is expected to be up 0.1%, 1% year on year. That's a little bit better than 0.9%. It's not recession, though. And so this is the conundrum for the European Central Bank, how much further they can drop interest rates. I think this is going to be a theme for this year, that what we'll see is the interest rate cuts, where some central banks got them away last year, are coming to something of a close. And as we get into the later part of the year, if things develop the way that they seem to be, with demand holding up pretty well, particularly in places like the United States, that by the end of this year, the talk about many central banks is when will they start to hike rates. That's a very different conversation, and obviously has implications for bond yields. I think the bond market's starting to take that into account anyway. Even when it rallies a little bit at the moment, it doesn't rally far, and it usually gives it away pretty quickly. And so, we're starting to see these these bond yields settling at the higher levels, and they'll probably have to be even higher levels by the time we get through into 26 and 27. If I was pushed, the US 10-year yield, which currently is running around about 4.5% mark, has to see topside of 5% at some point in 2026. And here too, we may not get to 5, but we get mighty close to it by the time we get through to 2026. So there's a fair bit that's happening, and just watching how all these developments go. And not least of that, of course, is all the uncertainty that political change is throwing into this as well.